On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Like one third more sports than a normal can.
Welcome to Tall Can Sports. After a little bit of time on the road, we are back in studio in the middle of a ridiculous heat wave here in Bytown. Nate Sager back with us, as has been the case on most of these summer shows this summer. How are we?
Good, Matt. Yeah. Good. I don't even want to talk about this heat.
Oh my God.
It's like everything just smells like ass.
It's true, man. It's just awful. It's awful. Swass, as most people are walking around.
There's no way to spin this.
Oh, like, it's terrible.
At least you're burning more calories.
Yeah.
Shut up. I went to yoga on Saturday. It was 32 Celsius.
Where it's hot
in the
yoga.
Studio. It wasn't even hot yoga.
Well, it became hot yoga. Yeah.
Something was going on with like, and I was just like,
before I came back up to Ottawa today, I was sitting outside having a drink with my sister, stopped in to visit there briefly on the way back, and she was sitting outside enjoying the weather when I went sat like, how can you sit out here? Like, this is awful. I couldn't believe it, man. Anyway, we won't bore everybody with too much of the talk of the weather.
I mean, everyone, it's the same for everybody.
That's right. So most recent piece of news here I think we'll get to first is obviously the piece. It seems to be getting some coverage right now, but on the day-to-day, kind of under the radar a little bit. Amateur sport, women's sport, sometimes those things have a hard time cracking the headlines, but it's big news right now. Canadian women's basketball team just defeated Cuba in the finals of the FIBA Americas, and they have qualified for a spot at the Rio Olympics. Nate has a piece up on the A game on Yahoo Sports. You should definitely go and check that out. I believe you obviously for that reason saw the game. Look, they got off to a bit of a sluggish start, but managed to get it together afterwards.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, there's no downplaying this. I mean, you think Canada hadn't qualified, you know, they went a few Olympic cycles without even qualifying for the tournament for London 2012. They didn't qualify through the FIBA Americas. They had to go play the last, quote unquote, the last chance tournament.
Yeah,
that's
one of those
held about a month out from the Olympics. Had to go through that, and I think got the last spot to go to London. And you know, it's probably put them under a big mental strain when they actually got to the real thing. But now here it is. They've got a whole year to plot out and plan, and you know, just a tremendous performance for a team that I just kind of say is sneaky good, because you sort of look at it, and I hate to sort of pit the national teams against each other,
right.
And you know, but I mean, you think about it, at the outset of this summer, there was so much talk about the national women's soccer team and them hosting the FIFA World Cup, and there really wasn't a lot about the basketball team, even though they were coming off finishing fifth at the Worlds last year, and I mean,
which in itself is unreal.
And people have known how good Kia Nurse is. People know that Natalie Ashunwa is, she went to a she led her team to the Final Four when she was at Notre Dame, and
right.
there's still, you know, a nice veteran core with that team. They really just didn't seem to ever get a lot of notice, but they're having that home base, and Edmonton's been good for them, and they've just really become a team that plays well together. They're greater than the sum of their parts, and you know, they just play the game the way it was meant to be played, really, and this whole week in Edmonton. And they got a nice push from Cuba tonight, but pulled it out and won, you know, win by 16. And, you know, they're off to Rio. And like I say, a whole year to not have that hanging over their head. Like, you know, that will they or won't they qualify for the tournament?
It's right.
All out of the way. And they've got a good team. And, you know, maybe there's medal potential. It's Olympic basketball is kind of interesting. Once you get past the U.S., it's pretty fun fight for those other two medals.
So would that be why the U.S. wasn't at this? They were just already
qualified. Well, they win the Worlds.
You don't have to.
You go to the Olympics, and Brazil obviously was hosting, so that kind of opened it up a little, because I think Brazil's team only had they sent a couple national team veterans down. I mean, they sent a stronger team than the one they sent to the Pan Ams, but ultimately they were only,
right.
I think, about five players from their team that went to the World Championships last year. Yeah, this was kind of a B team, and maybe a chance to addition some people for the last, you know, couple spots on the roster, because you always need all 12 in FIBA more so than you would see in the NCAA or the NBA or
right.
the WNBA. It's really more of a, you know, 10-12 player effort than the North American game is.
I don't know how closely you've followed this. Certainly for me, not very. And we may play a little game later on called Catch Matt Up, as he's missed an awful lot over the last 2 weeks. But the comparison that I've seen being thrown around is to, I guess, the last time, or not, maybe not the last time, but one of the last time that Canada hosted this tournament being 95 in Hamilton, and a Canadian team. I guess that's the last time Canada won this event, maybe, and that qualified them for Atlanta in 96 after, like you said, some pretty down years for the women's program. So that's kind of interesting. You just wonder, is this going to be the Canadian men's basketball team's been getting a ton of hype the last year or two with the couple of straight first overall picks and Steve Nash taking over the program. You wonder if this is kind of going to increase interest maybe in basketball next year at the Olympics, or even the men's FIBA America's Cup is coming up, you know, whether this is kind of turning the corner on both sides for basketball in this country.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's obviously not a fait accompli.
Right.
How well Canada is going to do, although, you know, the men's team with kind of a hodgepodge lineup, about half the guys that were on the Pan Am Games roster will be going to the FIBA Americas tournament, and then there were other guys who didn't play for
insurance
reasons, contract reasons.
Yeah,
but they're there. You know, Andrew Wiggins is good to go for the FIBA Americas tournament that starts, I guess, in a couple of weeks. And then
where is that tournament? Do you know?
I want to say Mexico City. But
yeah,
I don't know offhand.
No, me neither.
And that's really off the top of my head. That's really bad, because I just like talked to Dave Smart a couple of weeks ago for a story, and he's the assistant coach.
Yeah.
And, you know, he lives like, you know, basically we could walk to his office if we wanted to get eaten alive by mosquitoes in this heat. But anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is kind of a momentum thing, right? You know, it certainly had us happen. Like, you see that at the Olympics, like, oh, we won this. And then someone else gets kind of.
It builds and it builds.
Yeah. So, I mean, having the women's team play well at home, you know, get the opportunity to play well at home. I mean, you know, whereas, you know, 8 years ago, the only home games they played were basically friendlies in front of 300 people in Burnaby, BC or wherever. And, I mean, they had that. I mean, it was a great, nice, crazy, you know, crowd, a couple thousand people in Edmonton on Sunday night, and, you know, all out in the red and white and chanting Rio, Rio. And,
yeah.
You know, it was, you know, a great thing to see as a Canadian hoop head. And now, you know, see how it transfers over with the men's team as they try to qualify.
So what do you know about the qualifying process? Because I was asked today, and I thought it was a pretty good question, and I had no answer for it. Why are these two tournaments happening so close on the heels of a Pan Am Games? Why not have the Pan Am Games as the qualifying tournament? You know,
it is strange.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, because FIBA.
Right. Want to have their own thing, right? Their own deal.
Well, I mean, they'd
not
have
be blended into the other.
Yeah, I mean, they had the, it was the same thing in 2011, too.
Yeah.
But in that case, the Pan Ams were actually much later in the year because it was in Mexico. You can't,
you can't do that in July in
Mexico.
No, that's true. I never thought of that. But yeah, no, it does seem strange to me that you have these two, you know, major, in air quotes, international basketball competitions for the men and the women at the Pan Am Games, and they don't really mean anything. And then a month later, everybody goes off and plays for their spot in Rio. Yeah.
And indeed, it is in Mexico City.
Okay.
My wild guess was correct.
Speaking of places,
but two teams will qualify for Rio out of the men's tournament.
Speaking of places you don't really want to play in mid-July.
So they can get two spots, and you know, Brazil's in the tournament, so it depends on.
Yeah.
So potentially you could finish third if Brazil finished first and second, and
all that
jazz. And obviously the Americans are not in the tournament because they won the last Worlds,
which they tend to do.
And if the game is tied after three overtimes, a two-man sack race.
Well, we do like our funky international rules on this show. So,
getting back to the team, I mean, it's a fun team to watch, the women's team.
Right.
Just the way they, you know, work together. I mean, a couple games where they had an assist on nearly every basket. And it's just an interesting blend because they've got, you know, Kia Nurse is only 19 years old. I mean, she's been playing with them since she was 17. And Mia Marie Langway she's the lone player from the CIS on the team, so that's kind of, you know,
Windsor, right?
Yeah, University of Windsor. Yeah. Played with that, you know,
four straight national juggernaut
with Chantel Valli, coach there, and she had a tremendous game in the final. You know, 8 assists and 1 turnover. I mean, and that's what, you know, that's nuts. And you saw other young players stepping up, and then they've got sort of all the people who were from the London cycle who were still around, Kim Gauthier and, you know, Shona Thorburn's, you know, sort of a, you know, this veteran's, you know, savvy guard, but she ended up hurting her ankle and didn't get to play the last couple of games. And Tamara Tatham's kind of like, she just always seems to be a you know, great glue person on the team. And so I've always, you know, I always perk up, you know, I see 13 on the floor. I was like, okay, this is going to settle down. You know, speaking of someone who's, you know, you're trying to follow it. You know, you don't get really follow it from a detached journalistic perspective when it's your country playing.
Yeah,
and you know how much this program's, you know, did struggle for years. And during the London cycle, they were always like, you could tell they had a, you know, just a certain indomitability about them that was made them greater than some of their parts. And now they're, the talent, and especially the outside shooting.
Yeah, the talent's catching
the
up.
The outside shooting is there because, you know, the new math in basketball is the three ball. And they finally have that.
The fancy stats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All friends don't let friends shoot long twos, Matt.
It's good advice. What do you think then? Is it realistic to kind of shift away from the women here? Like you said, it's tough to tell with Brazil what they're going to do for this men's tournament. Is it realistic to, because I see a lot of people downplaying, and Jay Triano among them, the impact of an Andrew Wiggins in that he doesn't know how to play the international game, right? And that what
it is a switch.
Like, right.
I mean, it's less individual. You know,
officiating's
a little different. They call, there's things that, I mean, they allow a lot more physical play. They'll call more travels.
Call any travel.
They'll call
the NBA. You can pretty much
it's four steps. And if you need a fifth one, sure, take it.
Whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, it's, but this team played, I think, fairly well at, you know, the last couple of tournaments they've been together. I mean, they just ultimately didn't get the shots to drop
when
they needed
Caracas
them.
Caracas last year, 2 years ago, or Venezuela somewhere.
But they were definitely there. I mean,
yeah.
They have Corey Joseph. The only top guy that they weren't able to secure was Tristan Thompson.
That's a pretty important one to not get.
Yeah, pretty big one not to get. But then again, you know, you've got Anthony Bennett. It kind of, you know, play a similar position on the floor.
That's true.
I mean, and I mean, it's not really, the FIBA game's not really as much of a big man's game anyway because the wider lane, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, it tends to me it's more of a wing player's game. So we'll see how Wiggins, you know, fits into all that.
Right.
When the time comes, when they get, when they get to this, when it all starts, I guess, in 2 weeks on August 31st. Canada's first game being on September 1st against Argentina, which is that's a tough
draw start. Right off the hop.
Yeah, that's a tough one to start with. Argentina's one of those teams that are, you know, they're always like the analogy of the four 30-year-old guys at the Y who will beat the hell out of the four 18-year-olds because they just know how to play and they actually know how to shoot. And,
yeah, no, it's true.
You know,
so it does seem like it's a reasonable possibility they could qualify here, but anything.
But it would be exciting if Canada could qualify both teams for the Olympics
for sure.
In basketball. Cause I can't remember off the top of my head the last time that happened because it was like 2012. It was only the women's team. And 2000, it was the men's team.
Yep.
The men's team hasn't qualified since 2000 when Steve Nash was
paying the bills.
Yeah, Steve Nash wasn't even really Steve Nash at that point.
No, exactly.
Like, I mean, he was still with Dallas. I mean, if you were a hardcore NBA fan, you knew him, but wasn't like there wasn't a casual fan awareness of him.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely
he needed
true.
To win the NBA MVP like to get that.
Twice.
Yeah, twice.
So, exciting time for Canada basketball. The women obviously did a great job. By all accounts, the crowd in Edmonton was super supportive, super. When the tournament's going to be there, you can kind of wrap your arms around it and support it for a couple of weeks, right? And
yeah.
The Women's World Cup is across the country and Canada's traveling. It's really hard to get, I think the country as a whole got behind it and they did good crowds, but for that you didn't really have the chance for one city to kind of get behind Canada, right? And it's a little different environment, obviously much bigger sport. So
it's really cool how Edmonton's really embraced the national women's team. And, it helps. It probably helps. There's a couple Edmonton players on the team. But, I mean, they really made the pitch to, have them make that their home base there at the University of Alberta, which has a great basketball tradition on both sides with the Golden Bears men's team and the Pandas women's team. And
the Pandas, isn't that adorable?
Yeah.
They couldn't be Golden Bears.
They can't. Apparently a women's team can't be the Bears, even though, the best player in the WNBA, Brittany Griner, played for the Baylor Bears. Go figure that one out. Actually, I think they might be the dreaded L word in their name.
Oh.
Yeah, Lady Bear. Why? You don't
terrible.
Need it. Yeah.
Terrible. Let me ask you, before we segue off of this topic completely, a completely unfair question. Which athlete within their family is going to have a larger impact on their sport, Darnell or Kia Nurse?
I got to think Kia's got a chance to top Darnell.
Yeah.
I mean,
Darnell looks like a pretty good prospect.
There hasn't been a great Canadian
on a bigger stage, right?
Yeah.
And that's the problem. She may become one of, if not the best basketball player Canada's ever had for the women, but she'll never have that national TV every night kind of audience, right?
It's tougher. The WNBA, it has its following.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, when I need a basketball fix in the summer, I definitely watch it. I'm reasonably
what
entertained.
What channel is that on?
NBA TV has games.
Okay.
If you have like the sports package, like the NBA League Pass,
yes,
you actually get some WNBA games on there in the summer.
Okay.
If you're with a certain cable company that owns a certain baseball team.
That will get absolutely zero mention on this podcast.
Yeah. Insert corporate name here.
Yeah, exactly.
Stadium. She's already won a national championship with UConn.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's tough, obviously, to...
I mean, just to be recruited to UConn is a huge deal. I mean, that's the holy grail for women's basketball. So, I mean, I think within that milieu, Kia Nurse could have a bigger impact than her brother does. There's been,
he's going to be an Oiler. They're going to be bad.
He's
not going to pan out.
He's never going to see the playoffs. They got that McDavid guy, though. Yeah, that's a good question. That is a completely apples and oranges question.
Yeah,
Matt,
for sure.
Shame on you.
Yeah. You know what? Got to fill time.
The heat must be getting to you.
It absolutely is getting to me, I'll tell you. The Blue Jays. You and I sat here, might be almost 3 weeks ago. Maybe not quite that long.
It was about 3 weeks ago.
And I remember complaining a week earlier. You and I had just finished doing a sports show, and about an hour after I posted it, the Leafs hired Lou Lamoriello, because that's just the way my luck works.
Ah.
So to sit down and discuss it a week later, you've kind of missed the whatever.
Yeah.
So you and I sit down and do a show right after the Tulowitzki deal. And we're both pretty happy with it, but you're trying to figure out, what are they doing?
What's the end game?
Yeah, this isn't what you needed. So we do the show, we post. Of course, later that morning, oh, look who's coming to town, David Price. So we haven't really had a chance to talk about that on this show too much, but we're miles behind in the news cycle of it all. As we sit here now, the Jays have just lost 2 of 3 to the Yankees at home after a week ago taking 3 of 3 from New York and in New York. So it's kind of a tit for tat, I suppose. They sit a half game out with still, 10 games to go against New York? 7 games to go,
seven games to go against New York.
Yeah. Off to Philadelphia for 2 this week and then Los Angeles to play the Angels. They could do some real damage to the Angels if they could take that series and kind of separate themselves, as I think Baltimore's now already passed Anaheim today. But where do you think this is all going? I 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when all this happened, I said, great moves. The division's out of reach. They were 8 back. And I thought, at best, you got to take a game a week for the rest of the season. And they caught up in 2 weeks. So it shows what the hell I know. But where do you think it's all going? Are they going to stick? They're nobody's going to stay as hot as they've been. They won 11 in a row.
You're definitely sort of seeing some regression in that Yankee series. But, I mean, what we will say is, first off, I mean the Tulowitzki deal, we were both, there must be a move for a pitcher coming if they went and signed off on this. Mm-hmm. And indeed, that's what happened. We still thought there was a strong shot at the playoffs at that point.
Yep.
Indeed, that's what happened. I mean,
at least a wild card
game. Even with the losing 2 of 3 to the Yankees, the Jays have picked up 7.5 games in 19 days.
Yeah. Unreal.
That is quite the turnaround and, quickly.
And we didn't even mention, picking up Lowe, picking up Revere. All of a sudden, your 7, 8, 9 innings are set, and Hawkins, you've got him doing his, and Sanchez is in the pen going to the 8th, and Osuna's doing his. Your pen went from being highly questionable pretty good.
Yeah, it went from being one of those Seattle Mariners pens in the 90s to being the early 90s Blue Jays pen. But yeah, now 3.5 games clear of Baltimore in the wild card race.
Yep.
And, Angels are a half game out of the second wild card. Yeah, a couple series with the Orioles yet to play.
Yep.
I mean, this, I don't see.
September looks it's almost all AL East.
Yeah. Other than, I think, one interleague series in Atlanta, they're pretty much all within the East.
I am so sick of interleague going on in April and September or whatever.
I guess when you have an odd number of teams in each league.
Well, they don't anymore.
No,
they
15, do now. 15 for league.
Yeah, when it used to be 16 and 14. Yes. No, you're right.
You thought that I meant on even, but. Yeah, unfortunately, now there's 15. So now you have interleague. You have teams playing interleague in their opening day, and you have an interleague series going on in the final weekend of the regular season.
I tolerated it. I never loved it, but I tolerated it when they were all just kind of crammed around the middle of the season or just before the All-Star break.
I wouldn't have a problem with it being constantly through the year if they used the DH in all interleague games.
Yeah.
Why they do it the way they do it with having to use the pitcher, and it's topical because the Jays are going to Philadelphia.
Yes.
And the Jays are terrible in National League parks historically.
When you think about it.
And they'll probably find a way to lose one of those games to the Phillies, who are the worst team in baseball. 46-72.
Yikes. Major league bat.
They've probably got an outfield of Dennis Reynolds and Charlie Kelly and Frank Reynolds right now. Those are the characters on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I can't remember what Max's last name is. But anyway, the thing is that, it makes sense to do it that way in the World Series, but the American League team that's in the World Series is good enough to get around that inconvenience for 3 or 4.
Well, imagine
games.
You're an American League team,
but
in it on the last weekend, and you got to go in. Let's say you're the Jays to whoever in the National League on the last week. You got to put Encarnacion on the bench or somebody, right?
It's unfair.
Yeah,
I mean it should be the DH in both leagues, but
yeah,
you know in the minor leagues when an NL affiliate plays an AL affiliate. They use the DH. It's only when two NL teams play that the pitchers are in the lineup, right? I don't know why that rule wasn't adopted in the major leagues.
No, exactly.
But, yeah, but anyway, getting back to it with the Jays, I don't see any reason why they can't win the AL East now.
I mean,
the Yankees...
Tanaka looked pretty good this
weekend. Tanaka looked pretty good. Yeah. I mean, there was bound to be, like, some regression back after winning 11 games in a row.
Sure.
I mean, it's certainly there for the taking. I mean, only one more trip to make to the West Coast.
Thank God.
Two more of those dreaded interleague series against the two worst teams in the NL East.
At least you got that going for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's right there.
Right.
In their grasp.
But I mean, the bullpen, right? Like, to me, it's still not a great bullpen, but it's a reliable bullpen, right? Like, it's not going to dominate you.
It's not the Kansas City Royals bullpen.
That's right. But, you know, by making some of those moves and now... You know what, Hawkins, you don't have to use Loop. That's great news for once.
Yeah, Aaron Loop was sent down to Buffalo.
Was he?
Today? You might say he's out of the loop.
That's the kind of high-quality comedy people have come to expect on this show.
And the CSI theme music kicks up when I say that after I take my sunglasses off. I already made that joke once tonight, but... I workshopped it with my friends, and it still went over like a lead balloon. Well, at least I got one laugh from the guy saying it.
There you go. So good. And someone had to go down, obviously. But, you know, picked up another infielder, Pennington.
Cliff Pennington.
Yeah, not bad, right? You wouldn't mind another left-handed batter, but...
Yeah, this team tilts right farther than Stephen Harper.
Hey, nicely done.
Yeah.
He of New York Times fame today.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Anyway, it just seems like this team could still, and this is probably the fragile Toronto sports fan in me, just as easily go on another, you know, 10-3 run as go on a 3-10 run, right? Like, you wonder... Just, are they mentally strong enough now? Like, the wheels came off hard in August last year, right? And now that was out of some of the guys were frustrated and whatever that they didn't make any moves. But you just wonder, right? How secure is it? How I think it's somewhat hard to believe at this point that they're not going to get a wild card game. I just don't know if they're going to keep pace with the Yankees. Have a lot of vets, right? They know what they're doing. A lot of guys that know how to get through these races, your Beltrons, your Teixeiras, your Sabathias, you know, you just wonder, right? That's all. I'm certainly more comfortable than I was 3 weeks ago, but I'm still, everybody was riding high after that sweep in New York, and you kind of got brought back to reality a little this weekend to go, it's not going to be that easy.
It's not built in a day.
Right.
But yeah, just looking at the rest of August, you know, an eight game roads. Philadelphia, Anaheim, Texas road swing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Texas is starting to...
I'd love to meet the person who laid out that itinerary for the Jays, and I'd probably want to have a 2x4 with me.
Yes, exactly. Man.
And then, you know, Detroit-Cleveland homestand to kind of finish out August/Labor, I guess.
Yep.
The weekend before Labor Day weekend, because Labor Day is late this year. But it's there for the taking.
And then heavy AL East in September. A lot of, I know the Rays are in. You've got the Yankees for two more series. Baltimore for at least one more. So lots of, you know, that Baltimore series, that'll be big for Baltimore coming in. Thinking if we can take that series, maybe they're closing ground, right? So. It was real fun there for a couple of days when you're pounding everybody out and you're in first place and the dome sold out and going nuts. It's still going to be, you know, a month and a half to go. Like, it's a long haul still. So,
yeah, still 7 more games with the Orioles, 7 more with the Yankees.
Yeah.
I mean, Tampa Bay's not even that far back. And they still got, I think, to play 6 games with Tampa Bay.
Yeah. So it could just as easily come apart as... keep on this magical run. Do you think they have any chance of signing David Price?
I don't think so. I'm just thinking someone who's going to be able, I mean, the next contract he signs will be like basically a retirement contract. Yep,
$300 million, I bet you.
He's going to sign it with a team that plays in a park that's a launch pad?
Sure, if you're going to pay me $30 million.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I don't think it's very likely either. He's saying all the right things. He's you know, doing all that stuff that you have to do when you come to a new city. I would be careful to buy into it too much, because obviously you're not going to say, I don't really want to be here, and I'm leaving in December. You know, I hope, and maybe with some playoff success, it looks a little more inviting. That seems like a hard sell.
Seems like a hard sell. And I mean, if you look at it from his point of view, he's probably thinking, well, I'm here, you know, let's try to get the ring.
Yeah.
Because you never know where you might end up signing, and it might, if you're there long term, it might not happen, right?
Yep. Sign
somewhere for whatever, you know, a 30-year-old, you know, ace left-hander can command, which is going to be a crazy long contract. And the Jays have their whole no more than 5 years.
That's the thing, right? But that's Beeston's rule, and he's done at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So can you get him out the door before free agency day?
way back when it was no more, the Jays just have it. It was no more than 3 years. Now it's five, and maybe after Beeston leaves, it'll be seven. I don't know.
It's like Brian Burke when he was the Leafs GM. He had these. I have a trade deadline that starts a week before everybody else's Christmas trade freeze. Okay, so if you were offered Ovechkin on the 21st of December, you wouldn't do it? No, I would not do. Fuck you. Get out of here then. Anyway, you just wonder what it would take. Because what you just said, get the ring, if he gets it, he doesn't really need us anymore anyway, right? Unless you're that desperate for another one, then you kind of go, I can go anywhere now. Just give me that 10-year, $30 million a year contract and ride it out. So
yeah, I can't see it happening, but
11 pitchers they dealt away in that 2 week or that week span of picking up all those guys. 11 minor league pitchers. Someone's got to pitch next year. Man,
they do say there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. I'm not so sure.
Not in Toronto anymore, anyway.
Yeah, we certainly don't know more pitching prospects in Toronto's system after that.
The CFL. I saw very little this week other than some results. Anything of note jump out to you? What was the more Ottawa falls to 4-3 after a loss in Calgary?
A bad loss.
Yes.
48-3?
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah, that was just something that snowballed on them, and they just did not. It was kind of funny that, you know, TSN always shows the coach's pregame pep talk.
Yes.
From the locker room.
Yeah.
And Rick Campbell, I mean, I like Rick Campbell.
Yeah.
I think he has a good handle on what he's doing, but he's giving it, and players are like looking all over the place, like not looking at the coach. And I was just like, that's not a good sign. and then I just kept thinking, they did 23 takes, and that was the best one. and it was just kind of like, huh. And they were just, you know, it was just sort of strange. Chris Williams, obviously, you know, since he had that big game against Calgary 2 weeks ago, it's that sort of hamstring thing and hasn't played. And he didn't play in that one. They put, you know, one of the starting cornerbacks, Brandon McDonald, in as the punt returner. He fumbles two away, and, you know, the turnovers led to Calgary getting short field, and it just snowballed. And
right.
The Red Blacks have really had trouble anytime they've gone basically farther west than Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
I remember them getting destroyed in BC last year.
Well, and they didn't do so well in Edmonton when they were out here earlier this year.
Yeah. 46 to something. Man. And then 48-3 in Calgary.
They seem to leave the D at home.
Well, it's just a matter of being a young team and not preparing well. So I didn't have a lot high hopes for them in that one. I knew sort of knew. And you were getting Calgary coming off a bye, and you're getting a pissed off Calgary.
Same as Edmonton, right? Coming
off
a bye.
Yeah, strange how the second year team keeps getting road games against teams that had their bye week.
Dope.
I mean, I'm obviously not a, you know, Red Blacks fan, but, you know, I'm a fan of what, you know, what's fair is fair. And,
right.
I mean, obviously everyone has to take byes at some point, but that's a little strange that twice in a row Ottawa was the one that had to donate their bodies to science for for that. But yep. Yeah, we'll see what comes back. I mean, Ottawa, sort of a better measuring stick next week in Toronto, and then they get Saskatchewan to close out the month. But obviously sort of the most newsworthy thing with the CFL was the Michael Sam experience in Montreal. And
yeah, and I do want to get to that. I've got it next on the – am I correct that there's three teams right now with four wins in the East?
Well, it's Hamilton and Toronto each at 5-2.
Five now, okay.
And Ottawa at 4.
When I left, I was still able to point and and judge you for your prediction that Hamilton was going to be any good this year. As you said early on, looked like maybe the most talented team. And I think when I left, they were...
1-2?
1-2, 2-2, something like that, yeah. And since then, they've been coming. Why, like, you said this so early on, when I'm looking at it, and there's no evidence to me at that point that they're that it's coming. And yet here they sit now, 5-2, tied atop the division. Why did you think it was, they still had it in them? Like, what is it about that team to you that looked like it was going to come around?
I thought Zach Collaros is a pretty good quarterback,
yeah,
for one, and yeah, you know, a nice group of receivers around him. Terrence Tolliver, and I mean, Andy Fantuz has been out during this, and so yeah, has CJ Gable, but they certainly got other guys, Luke Tasker, who can make plays, and just aggressive defense. And here, I haven't even mentioned Brandon Banks yet. I mean,
right.
Now, granted, I mean, that 5-2 may flatter them a little, because I think they've had something like 9 defensive and special teams touchdowns in 7 games. You can't count on it averaging more than 1 D/STTD.
Yeah.
STTD?
That's...
Yeah, I know. I was thinking of like fantasy football. They always have that category, D/ST, for touchdowns by the defense and the return teams. But I mean, they've had something like 9 or 10 of those already, because they had a couple pick sixes, and Banks took a punt back against BC on Saturday night in that 52-22 beatdown. Yeah, that was probably the worst punt coverage I've ever seen. Because they punted it down to him, and he kind of just caught it, and then started to do the old jog out to the left, and like 6 BC guys kind of stand there like dummies at a grade 8 dance, and then all of a sudden he just turns it up the sideline, and it's like 6 blockers, drawing straws on which one's going to take out the punter.
Yeah,
and he runs it back like 96 yards.
I did see the highlights on that. That was terrible.
It was just like terrible. 6 guys just going, what, me?
You getting them or I'm getting them?
He's gone.
Coach looks mad.
So I just thought Hamilton just sort of had a good combination of all that. And here they are at 5-2.
Saskatchewan still just...
Yeah,
holy crap. Yeah. Middling along out there.
0-7.
Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable tough year.
I was joking with a friend of mine who was a Riders fan. It was like, it was his birthday. I was like, did you get a cake for your birthday, or did you get a cake because the Riders aren't going to lose this week? And they've been in games, but a lot of it's just been playing well enough to lose, and they haven't had the defense.
Well, especially early on, they had their first like 3 games, they were within a major, a field goal of, maybe being 3-0 at that point. Now, man, I didn't see that. I didn't see them being great. But I didn't see 0-7, right? I don't think I saw an 0-7 team in the league.
There is a lot of parity. I didn't think Winnipeg or Montreal was anything special, and I didn't think BC was anything special. And they're all there with 2-3 wins, sort of on the cusp of playoff races.
Yeah.
Maybe this will be the year where an Eastern team crosses
over.
It's Montreal. Montreal has to go out to play the West Division semifinal.
Wouldn't that be wild?
Yeah, good luck with that, by the way. I'm always rooting for the crossover team to maybe like go through and
have an all Eastern, all
West Grey Cup. But that was the most, the biggest thing on the field was probably, way Hamilton's come along, and obviously, it's developing into a nice race with, a pair of 5-2 teams in each division.
Right.
And Ottawa, the other team that's in the black at 4-3.
Instead of the red
flag. Yeah.
You alluded to it a couple of minutes ago. I did want to get your opinion on this whole Michael Sam thing. He was in, he was out, he was in, he's out. I've seen some pretty terrible things on the internet. Can you believe that? People saying terrible things on the internet.
Yeah, I know.
But, there's been no explanations, there's been no whatever, which maybe he doesn't owe you one. If he wants to just be done, I guess that's his business. There's some people that have started to call him a coward. There's some people... It's really hard to say without knowing exactly what's going on. What's your take on it? You've covered the one game he played.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. I mean, I wrote about it and
right. Basically
tried to convey that it was no different than any other football game. So why is this a big deal?
For real, yeah.
But it wasn't sort of a weird atmosphere afterwards. Michael Sam wasn't trying to seek out any attention for himself at all. Like, right. I mean, there were cameras on the field, like, kind of, like, following him, and he didn't as much look at them as he, you know, because, you know, after a football game, players from each team will kind of come together for a bit and sort of fraternize and just, you know, just sort of shake hands and say, you know, good luck for the rest of the season, hope you stay healthy, blah, blah, blah. Yep. And then he went, walked off the field, and we sort of all trailed him. Tunnel and waited for them to open the Montreal dressing room, and finally went in and talked to him, and it was, you know, his answers were pretty straightforward, nothing sweeping, nothing self-aggrandizing. And then it was kind of like, well, he didn't do anything in the game and he wasn't a factor. And I was just like, man, it's just one game. I mean, it's his first game in the league.
And pretty hard on the defensive side of the ball to be a huge factor like that, right? Like you said,
he played 12 plays, I mean, which was the plan. And then, you know, I see people sort of playing up the fact that, you know, one of Ottawa's touchdown plays, he was, you know, they ran a play action pass to his side of the field and he got sucked in by a play fake. And I'm like, a lot of guys have been sucked in by Henry Burris play fakes over the over the years.
Pretty good quarterback.
And he sort of knows what he's doing. He's been doing this you know, for 20 years. So it's hard to say. I mean, he wouldn't be the first big-time NCAA player to come to the CFL and just say, this, you know what, this isn't for me. Yeah, it's a grind. I'm not making great money compared to the NFL. And, you know, I'm in a foreign country.
But he doesn't really seem to have a spot. Like, it would make sense if even a practice roster spot had opened up for him again or something, right? But it doesn't seem like there's anywhere to go.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. Montreal had him on the active roster, not the practice roster. And that seemed to cause a problem because people were like, well, you know, everyone else who comes up here kind of has to wait on the practice roster and make your $750 a week until a roster spot. Why not him? And that seemed to
lead to
resentment. But at the same time, I mean, isn't that just kind of, you know, if the Montreal's like, you know, allowing that to become a thing, aren't they just pandering to kind of the prejudice?
Right. And that's sort of that's what kind of annoyed me. Right. Is what do you want to see happen here? If you put him on the practice roster, you're going to have a loud minority screaming that you're holding his sexuality against him. If you push him right through, you're going to have a loud minority screaming that he's getting special treatment. There was no way to win that.
Yeah, and you just feel bad, too, like when he mentioned mental health. And you just can't, I mean,
well, I'm sure there's something to that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I mean, you read the story about the, you know, the ball player today.
Yep, from Milwaukee, I believe.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I got his name right. David Denson, first openly gay player in affiliated minor league ball. And I read the Milwaukee story, and he said he was, you know, it was causing him a lot of, you know, depressive feelings, not knowing what to do, what to tell people. And I'm sure, you know, that could be a factor with Michael Sam. And you know, it's much as it was, you know, it kind of takes a strength to sit there and say, okay, I got to go deal with this and I can't be here right now. And I mean, football's a what have you done for me lately business. And Montreal obviously had surer options at defensive end. And I guess that's how it ends. But at least, you know, at least the guy made the effort. You know, like it's, you know, history isn't, you know, just.
It's tough, right? Because you
can't. One straight line.
You can't. Like you said, it's impossible for you and I to sit here and understand whether or not he was, you know, overly stressed out about it, whether it was a football decision, whether it was a mental health decision, whether it's impossible to know that. What is not impossible is, again, even in this now world of sports where you know, if I came on and, you know, the podcast any week and said, Siobhan Walker was terrible and he, whatever, it's fine. You're ripping a sports figure and you hate, you. I can see people, I have seen people, as did you, online during that game, like you said, blaming him for being sucked in on that play by Burris, and he starts, oh, he's terrible. And people commenting, you just hate him because he's gay, and you can, and it gets into this really weird debate that sports was never meant to handle. And that's not to say that, by any means, that these people shouldn't be playing, but how do you handle that as a player, right? Like, everything I do... this is always there. There's always someone that's going to bring it up. And I get four questions in the post-game press conference about a play I missed or a play I made. All right, it's going all right. You know,
how does it feel to be the first openly gay?
Okay, yeah. We're back.
Well, nobody asked. Well, no one asked.
No, I
that
understand.
Exactly.
You
got asked.
But you know what I'm saying.
You got asked something like, what do you think about the significance
of
it, but which is, you know, code.
Of course. Can we not just talk football? Like, and when you say that, when I say that, I get that there's a certain amount of disrespect, right, that can be perceived or pulled out of that, that maybe I'm downplaying the significance of what he's done and what he's – that's not my intention. But once he's answered all these questions already 100 times, you can find those answers anywhere you want to. Can we just watch him play football?
Yeah.
Can we just watch him play and not care if he's white or black or gay or straight or has 4 heads or is green or
yeah. Well, I mean, for the first game, I mean, you had to ask.
I guess, but
for the first
does game. The average football fan care? Does the average Alouette fan care? Honestly, and again, I get that.
You know what? I bet the average, that's actually a good point, because I bet the average fan did not care.
Right. And that's not meant to be disrespectful.
That's not
meant to be disrespectful. He's going through, it's got to be tough.
Because
did he make the play? As a fan, bring in anybody who can make a play.
Yeah.
Man.
Maybe it is a chattering class type thing, because to me, like, it didn't seem like why it should be a big deal, but then I see.
But it always is, right?
Yeah.
And you wonder how.
But I mean,
maybe that's what's going through his head.
Did it affect anyone's enjoyment of that football game?
Right.
No, not really.
Right.
Not at all. Not whether they were an Alouette fan or a Red Blacks fan. So why should it be a big deal?
Right.
You know, internally to the team. That was the point I tried to get across. I mean, you know, there's that saying, everyone you see and is fighting a battle you have no idea about.
That's right.
I mean, there's football players have all sorts of things going on.
And so, again, like you and I are.
And like Henry Burson, who knows what they do away from the field? I mean, who knows what anyone does, right? So why should that one thing be, you know, a disqualifier?
Sure. Right. And so you and I are ill-equipped to understand what this professional athlete, all the pressure that comes with being a professional athlete, and then all the pressure that comes with his situation. Who knows what's going through his head? But you wonder if that wasn't part of it.
But
how long is this going to be part of my story? When will I be just another football player?
Well,
that would be a daunting thing to try and look down the road and say, I'll never be like the guy next to me that's just answering questions about the game.
What's an interesting to me when you're talking about that is just, you know, looking at this David Denson story is
right.
How MLB has, you know, an ambassador for inclusion,
right.
You know, Billy Bean, not the guy Brad Pitt played in the movie, although I suppose they can make another movie.
Sure, why not?
Brad Pitt could play the other Billy Bean. and he, you know, he's a former major league player who's gay, and he's, you know, that's his job is to sort of deal with all that stuff that comes up.
Right.
And I mean, that's probably helped, you know, it's obviously helped this minor league ball player, David Denson, but is there anyone like that in football, like in the CFL or NFL? I don't think so. To me, it's just that's
certainly
one thing with the Michael
CFL.
Sam thing. I mean, if he couldn't make it on his own merits as a player,
right,
and that appears to that it's possibly possibly the case, then that's fine.
That's it. You got to have the right to cut him, like everyone else,
exactly.
Right?
Yep. I mean,
and
you certainly can't say that. Well, it would be difficult to cut him. You can't use that as an excuse not to sign him.
That's what I'm saying. Are you good enough or aren't you? Can you make a play or can't you?
And I think it might be that simple. Like probably, you know, 55% of it.
Was
or whatever.
He good enough?
But just to finish the one thought, I mean, was there any equivalent to that position in the CFL or NFL?
I can't imagine in the CFL.
And there isn't. And that kind of strikes me is that, you know, he didn't really seem to have you know, sort of read between the lines a little. I mean, it didn't seem like he had the support network around. I mean, one would need, like, the way that.
What was the name of the NBA player who came out a couple
Jason
years ago?
Jason Collins. Yeah.
And it was a different situation.
Because he was
but
a veteran
similar
guy.
In that his career might have already been over, right? He was on, you know, he wasn't that great anymore. It was plausible to believe.
He was a role player.
Right. Even if he hadn't come out, it would not have shocked anyone if he wasn't signed to a contract the next year.
Yeah. He was a guy who kind of fills a role as a, you know, plays a few minutes.
And so to me, Michael Sam is similar in that it's going to be really hard to tell what the average sports fan, what the average sports writer is how they're going to handle it until you get someone who's a can't-miss player, right? Michael Sam maybe wasn't good enough, and it does look like he wasn't good enough. Now, Did he leave for mental health reasons? Maybe.
I mean, certainly you can't.
Right.
You can't disconnect the
right
struggle with being a new game and the struggle with trying to.
But until that guy comes along,
open and the struggle with mental health, they're all sort of
until the
overlapping.
Next Andrew Luck comes along, right? That next guy that everybody knows is going to be the guy, right? The next Andrew Wiggins, right? Or the next LeBron. It doesn't even have to be a superstar, but someone that can easily play on your team comes out. Then you can kind of start to make these. There wouldn't be the question, did he get cut because he was gay? Well, if he got cut and he was that good, yeah, it was probably because he was gay. And now we can all look at that coach and say, what are you doing, right? When there are these fringe guys, it's really tough to say part of it is the psychological and what part of it is the talent.
And it's an awkward thing for the team because of, the locker room politics and players are like, why are they doing all this for him? And,
imagine the Rams. Like, you think they were looking forward to cutting the first openly gay player? There was going to be flack for that no matter how poorly he played. It's tough, right? Dallas Cowboys gave him a chance on the practice roster.
And it's like the Alouettes, they tried to, not tell people he was going to dress. And it's not like they had someone, like a team official there doing, while he was doing a media scrum in his locker. Like,
right.
It's just kind of like, all right, 10 people are going to go right to this one guy, which, I don't go in the visiting locker room after every Red Blacks game.
Right.
I mean, sometimes I go to the Red Blacks room. Sometimes I, go to both.
Right.
But I haven't seen like 4 TV cameras go to one player at all. Usually, it's like 5 or 6.
Well, and you've got American media up. And
I didn't see any. That was part of the reason the Alouettes kind of kept it quiet. They didn't want ESPN flooding in at the last minute. Probably because there's no room for them to sit in the press box.
Right.
True. Actually, that would have been funny. ESPN would be like, standing
looking
up.
Around?
Where am I? Well, I'm sitting there. Effing rights.
Yeah. Out of my way, man.
Had to go six. So, I still think it's a step forward because.
Oh, I totally
people
agree
now
with that.
See that, like I said, it didn't change the enjoyment of the game or not.
And you don't have to be the first guy now.
Yeah, the next
someone else has done it. Someone else has come out. And I don't know how much easier that makes it, but it's got to mean something, right?
Yeah.
So
and you also sort of saw who the people were who got why is there so much attention on this? What I always call the I'm not homophobic, but crowd. If you have to use those three words at the start, guess what? You probably are.
And maybe this isn't a great comparable. I'll be totally honest. I'm tired of hearing about Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah.
Honestly, because here's the only reason why. When was the last time anyone talked about Bruce Jenner before this happened? Irrelevant. Career was over, out of the media spotlight. You were nobody. Yeah. And now all of a sudden you're.
He won the decathlon. Come on.
Who gives a shit?
No, before either of us were born.
And so, good for him, good for her now. That's all great, but I'm done. I didn't care about Bruce Jenner. Why would I care about Caitlyn Jenner? I'm glad you've made the change that makes you happy in your life. But it really means nothing more than me to that, or than that, right?
Yeah, it's just one person who's had to do that. There's...
Right.
Thousands we don't hear about.
Obviously,
struggle with
all kinds of these things.
All sorts of things, socially.
But you're all over TV and we're all going to hear about it. I know how terribly that can come off to say that sort of thing.
Yeah,
all I'm saying is.
Because people are on such a hair trigger, they're like, oh, you don't care at all about
trans
people.
All I care about,
like
I said,
no.
That's not the point at all. I'm saying I didn't care about Bruce Jenner.
Exactly.
So why do I care about Caitlyn Jenner?
Exactly.
Make these changes in your life. Always be true to what you think you need and make yourself happy. All these sorts of things. But like you said, there are thousands of people across this country or whatever going through similar things whose stories aren't being told and are making these changes to make their own lives more livable and fully support that. But this is a washed up celebrity, athlete, whatever that no one had cared about in 20 years. And anyway. That's a whole other debate, and we have kind of ventured off the...
I guess getting back to the Sam thing.
Yeah.
At least it made the effort, and I think people are wiser for what is involved.
I'm sure that's true. Yeah.
I mean, it's still a step forward that someone was willing to give him the opportunity. And, I mean,
and a couple people
ultimately he did the best.
Three different teams
for him,
gave
really.
A shot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Indeed.
Couldn't play.
And he just didn't find that foothold or whatever.
Yeah.
Just, you know, didn't find that niche. And
Do you think we see him again? Or is this going to be a permanent?
I'd have to think that that was probably his last shot. I mean,
three organizations.
Yeah, I mean,
two leagues.
Yeah, two shots at the NFL, and then as a practice, training camp at St. Louis, practice squad in Dallas.
Yep.
Come up, play in the CFL. I mean, Montreal made a big investment in him.
Yep.
And he ends up playing 12 snaps.
Yep.
I mean, at that point, there's not enough there.
I still think there's a place for that guy in the game, though. Whether he can be that guy in football that can help other people along, right? Like we just talked about.
Yeah, perhaps he could be.
Maybe there's something in that area, but it doesn't look like he's going to have a future as a player.
But I think that's something that each commissioner, the ginger hammer there in the NFL, Roger Goodell and Jeffrey Wirge in the CFL probably should look at, like having, like I say, something similar to that ambassador for inclusion. I mean, the NHL's certainly done a lot with you can play. And we should say the CFL's done a lot with you can play too, but maybe you sort of need to have some of the position. And while we're talking about, I guess progressive politics and sports, obviously the CFL brought in a really comprehensive, violence against women policy.
Yep.
So certainly there's a lot of, momentum for things like that. And, machismo-filled world of, male pro sports that no one was talking about 10 years ago.
They
should have been talking about it, but they certainly weren't. But now they're starting to realize you can't shut
the conversation is important, if nothing else, right?
And yeah,
it's got to grow. It's got to start from somewhere.
And so. That progression doesn't happen in a fell swoop. It was in fits and starts.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's what we sort of saw with the whole Michael Sam thing.
Yeah. So we've covered some ground, got a little heavy there towards the end with the topic matter, but I think it was an important subject and we gave it our best shot, our 2 cents. We are hoping to get back on schedule now that we're back from being on the road, back in studio. We'll hope to get a couple of Audio Whiplash episodes done, certainly get back into the rotation here on Tall Can Sports. So look for a second show later on this week. Until then, for Nate, it's Matt. We'll catch you on the next one.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.